This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Golden Arrow Resources, a junior mining powerhouse with strong management, cash rich, and high quality properties with precious metals, gold, silver, and recently added copper for its demand and price rise. Golden Arrow has a proven five-step development strategy, previously responsible for three major discoveries with two in production. Golden Arrow Resources, U.S. trading symbol GARWF, and in Canada, GRG. Web address, goldenarrowresources.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Francis Rose, who is the host of the Fed Scoop Radio Daily Scoop. Francis talks to people in and formerly in the federal government in the Washington area and beyond about the task of managing a recovering economy, the pandemic, and the normal duties of the agencies and enterprises and secretariats to conduct the federal government's workload. We begin today with an exercise in learning how the GSA, the General Services Administration, acts like I've described it to Francis as a good homeschool teacher, homeroom teacher, distributing graham crackers. Everybody has to get the right share of graham crackers, otherwise there'll be upset people. He spoke with John Zangardi, president at Red Horse Corporation, who is a former Department of Homeland Security chief information officer. And the discussion is about the distribution of $150 million. I know it doesn't sound like much given we're talking trillions, but you begin with building blocks. $150 million by the GSA to 14 what are described as citizen-facing digital service projects. All very worthwhile with convincing names. Francis, a very good evening to you. Definition, what is the GSA and how is it in the role of distributing this money to digital services? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on the program. GSA, the General Services Administration, is exactly what it sounds like. It does a bunch of things. It does a number of functions to support the other agencies across the federal government, and it stood up a number of years ago. The point of it was that a lot of the functions that agencies were doing with acquisition and managing their real estate, things like that, could be managed by one organization more efficiently than everybody doing it themselves. And so GSA has taken on that role over the years, and it has three primary functions. One is the Public Building Service, PBS, and the Public Building Service is the real estate manager and agent, basically, for the entire federal government. They have a portfolio of leased properties, and they have a portfolio of owned properties, and PBS oversees and administers them. The second major function is the Federal Acquisition Service, and the Federal Acquisition Service, or FAS, provides a whole bunch of resources to agencies for them to be able to go and buy things. They have one particular bureau inside FAS that administers technology purchasing. Now, other agencies can go out on their own and buy technology and other things through other vehicles or on their own. But the point of GSA was we can do a lot of these things so that if an agency just wants to come to us and say, we don't want to figure out how to buy 1,000 laptops, GSA has the mechanism to be able to do that and many other things through the Federal Acquisition Service. And then GSA also has an Office of Government-Wide Policy that makes policy and implements it for things that apply to the entire federal government. So GSA is just kind of an organization that does a variety of things. Nobody outside of the Beltway, as you say, has ever really heard of it before, knows what it does. But it does some really important things in support of all the agencies, John.
The American Rescue Plan passed earlier this year in the late winter, I believe, of 2021. $1.9 trillion, there's that T word, but we're down to $150 million from that original law passed by Congress, signed into law by the president. These are wonderful sounding programs. I didn't know this wasn't happening. For example, streamlining identity verification, very worthwhile. Creating inclusive design patterns, bridging the gap to Wi-Fi access, building a talent pipeline for government technologists. Are these programs new, or have they been underway and they're now being refunded for the next fiscal year?
So the money that you're referring to, the $150 million, was specifically for digital transformations for all of those things. So the programs have been happening. They're continuing to happen. But to varying degrees, each of these 14 programs needed some kind of conversion from analog processes to digital processes. And that's what this money is going toward. The government, as you and I have spoken about on many occasions, John, is behind the eight ball in a lot of cases on these digital transformations. They have not had either the funding or the drive, the momentum, the priority that the private sector has had to digitize the processes. Now, COVID obviously changed that. When you can't go to a Social Security office and apply for Social Security, the way that you do that online better work really well. And we've seen that in a number of different areas. And by and large, federal government's responded pretty well to that. There have not been any processes that people have said this works really terribly that continued to be terrible. There were struggles at the Small Business Administration early on in the PPP program, but they got fixed pretty quickly. But there are some of these things that just over the years have fallen through the cracks, and they're really in the last, I would say the last 2 years of the Trump administration, and then again since the President Biden took office, the beginning of this year, there really has been an emphasis on continuing the momentum of the digital service conversion in the federal government. It started right after the Affordable Care Act meltdown of healthcare.gov, when President Obama said we really need to get digital services in government right. But I would say it took a while for that momentum to snowball. And now it's really a big priority. And we're starting for the first time. I don't know if it pertains to any of these 14 programs that we talked about on the show today, but we're starting to see programs that were born digital in the federal government, which I don't think 5 years ago a lot of people would have thought too much about.
And the people who are in charge of this, who are charged with doing this, this is something all new for them, right, Francis? They're learning on the job. They were hired in a different world, and now they're in this digital world during a pandemic, working from home or working remotely. That's a completely different skill set than going into the office and dealing with paper.
Well, certainly the remote work environment is completely different for a lot of these folks. But I would say that people would be surprised by the number of digital natives that are working in the government, especially at organizations like U.S. Digital Service, the Defense Digital Service. There's 18F at the General Services Administration. I mentioned that Technology Transformation Service a few minutes ago, and 18F is a piece of that. It's like a little in-house consulting organization for agencies so that an agency can say, I want to do this. And these digital geniuses really can say, this is how you would start to go about doing this, or this is what you would ask for when you put out a request for information or you put out a request for proposals, so that folks like you just described who are learning this, in the early stages, so that they have a resource to be able to go to within the government and say, what do I need to know? What do I need to ask for? I think folks would be surprised at the number of those people that are now kind of seated all across the federal government. There aren't nearly enough of them. There should be more, but it's a slow process to get them in. But what I've found is once those people come into the government and they get hooked on being able to work on some of these really important missions, they really get into it. And a lot of the folks that expected to come in and serve maybe 1 or 2 years wind up staying 3, 4, 5 or longer. And so I think over time, as that becomes a more viable option for people to come to Washington instead of going to Silicon Valley or Austin or Boston, Massachusetts, I think that digital core of people will grow. I use the word core, C-O-R-E, not C-O-R-P-S, will grow and mature and become a lot more common and a lot more visible to people.
Francis Rose is the host of the Daily Scoop podcast at FedScoop. The website is FedScoop, in which he has conversations with people who either are managing or former managers of the federal government, including those charged with transforming all of that data into the digital universe of the immediate and future decades. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.